This is Jody Stone on the 14th of August, 1989, sitting in the home of Willem Kerr, who lives on what's now called Sharon Road, which we used to call Hotchkiss Road or Montgomery Street. And we're going to talk about him and about Salisbury School. Now, tell me about this book and what's it called?
This book is called A Light in the Cupola. It was published in 1986. It's based largely on a manuscript written by a former teacher at Salisbury School, Edwin Tappert. Edwin Tappert wrote this as a history of the school, going way back to the antecedents in New York City. And he thought to have it published, but George Langdon didn't like the tone of it, because George Langdon was portrayed somewhat in his last few years as being sort of weak and not being able to do the proper discipline to the school. And he left that to his assistant headmaster, Roger Nelson, who was, I would say, even weaker than George in those days. But nevertheless, the thing was salvaged in the alumni office, and the head of the English department in the early 80s was a man by the name of, it's in here somewhere, rewrote the book. And as he rewrote it, the man's name was Morgan Shipway, incidentally. And as he rewrote it, there are certain items in the book that aren't quite true, but nevertheless, this in general is a good history of the school and its tribulations over all the years.
Now, I want to know about you, because we have to know who you are.
Well, I joined the faculty of Salisbury School in 1937, and I taught there for 38 years till I retired at the age of 65. In those years that I was there, I taught English, I taught French, I taught math, I even was head of the math department for a couple of years, I taught music, I did all the psychological testing, reading tests, etc., etc., etc. In addition, I spent quite a few years in the summer school, and I did the admissions for the summer school for about 25 years.
You covered the bases.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. In addition, I was the school organist. I taught all sorts of keyboard music. I was the originator of a choir in the chapel. And of course, I had a running glee club, which was some years was better than other years.
Tell me about Salisbury School, because I don't know anything about it. Why was it founded in this town or in Salisbury?
Well, Salisbury School was founded in the year being, I don't know what the year was, but that's in this little booklet. And it was founded in the year 1901, I think. And it was a school originally in New York City. As a matter of fact, to be more specific, it was actually in, what is that borough called?
Bronx, Queens?
No.
Brooklyn?
No, there's another one.
Staten Island.
Yep. Staten Island, and was known as St. Austin's. I have no idea who St. Austin was. I've been asked several times who St. Austin was, but I'm not up on my saint, and I have no idea who St. Austin was. Suffice it to know that the school was in a place where the people started suffering from malaria.
My word.
And the rector of the school, the so-called rector, that is George Quayle was the rector, was getting sort of tired because too many people lived near the school, and he was forever having to talk to parents and so on, and he was not too pleased with that, so he decided, by tradition, I don't know how true this is, but I think it says so in here too, by tradition, he took a compass and put one point on a place in New York City and drew a circle with a radius of 100 miles. He said, somewhere along this 100 mile radius, I would like to found a school. So then it turned out that there was a large tract of land for sale in Salisbury, Connecticut, and George Quail thought that would be a fine place to have a school, far enough away so that parents wouldn't be always interfering with them, and that boys would always be required to go for a weekend, things of that sort.
Do you know who owned that land? From whom the school bought it?
Senior.
Oh, okay.
Senior. It was a farm. And by slow additions over the years, it has been enlarged and it's moved across the road and now goes all the way down to the lake where they have lake frontage and so on. Well,
what lake?
The Twin Lakes.
Oh!
Goes all the way down to the Twin Lakes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
So that's where the crew...
That's where the crew, where the boathouses are, yes.
But that must have been quite a while ago, because Salisbury's been known for its crew for years.
Yes, but till the late 30s, it would only row in club competition. They had clubs in the school. There were two clubs, the Connacht's and the Berkshires, and they rowed each other. And it wasn't until the late 30s that they went outside the school and rowed places like South Kent and so on and so on. They, of course, have rowed abroad.
They row at Henley.
So,
what is that cup called? The Queen Elizabeth?
The Queen's Cup?
I don't know
what it is.
But they've been very successful.
Oh, yes, they've been very successful. I don't know. I don't think they go over every year, but they just go over some years.
So this was George Quail, on Staten Island. He founded what became known as Salisbury School, and the name St. Austin's disappeared. Then George had Emerson?
Emerson was his son.
And he was not connected with the school?
Emerson was the second headmaster.
Was the second, following his father.
Right.
Rather like, what's his face at Deerfield?
Emerson had, in the meantime, been teaching at Hotchkiss.
I didn't know that.
Sure, he taught at Hotchkiss.
Well, what's the connection with Milmine?
George Milmine was the brother of Mrs. Quail, Charlotte Quail.
So she was Charlotte Milmine, and she married Emerson.
Blauvelt, I think, Quail.
Okay, all right. Then who came after Emerson Quail?
Emerson Quail died very tragically and very suddenly.
He did?
Oh, yes. We had, in the winter we had several weekends, and we had a parents' weekend in the winter time. And he said goodbye to the parents on a Monday, and the following day he went down to New York to the hospital because he had trouble with his tennis elbow, and he wanted that bone scraped because he was a great tennis enthusiast. He wanted to have that bone scraped, so they gave him a overdose of one of the new drugs that were just coming in there at the time. And the following Saturday, the same parents who had left on Monday had to come back here for a funeral.
Wow.
And that was, of course, a very bad time for that to happen in the school. The school was low as far as the enrollment was concerned. The enrollment was down to about 40, I would say.
Mm. So this was when?
This was in 1941.
Just at the start of the war.
Yeah.
Now, when I came here, which will be 40 years ago tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Wasn't there a Mrs. Emerson Quail living in the house next to the Milmine?
That was the old Quail house that had been built for Emerson Quail when Emerson Quayle was teaching at Hotchkiss.
Okay. Well, surely the school didn't build that giant house for him. He must have built it himself.
Oh, they had plenty of money, yes.
Yeah, maybe,
yes. And you see, Emerson had taught at Hotchkiss for a long time.
So he lived there, and his sister, Miss Molly Milmine, lived next door.
Yeah.
And then the was it Mrs. Wolf. Milmine's mother who had the other house that's torn down now?
I don't know.
Well, I remember when I came, there was something about somebody's mother-in-law lived there.
There's a Mrs. Wolf living there now, isn't there somewhere?
No, I tell you who bought it is
Effie Smith's
daughter.
Right.
Who runs the shop in Salisbury. But there was a third smaller house there, and I always thought, I guess it must have been George Milmine's mother. I now understand that Quayle connection. Now, something else we want to know about is the thing that Salisbury's so well known for, which is the summer program. Was that started by you?
No, that was started by Harold Corbin.
No, really?
See, right?
Oh. Now, what did Joe Rudd have to do with it?
Joe Rudd was just one of the teachers, and I was one of the teachers there.
Was it revolutionary, this program?
It filled a need for schools which hadn't been fulfilled before that time. You see, I did the admissions for a long time there. I taught there. And my idea was, my thing was that I thought that they shouldn't limit it to English. They should limit it, they should show how the English language, the knowledge of the English language, would also help in mathematics and sciences. I wanted to teach mathematics there, remedial math. Harold Corbin didn't feel that way, but I persuaded Harold for me to do it for 2 years. I think I was quite successful. There were some people who, surprisingly enough, their SAT scores went way up.
Did they really? Why only 2 years?
Well, I wasn't going to teach anymore to summer school.
And nobody else did it.
And for a while they did it, they made it optional.
Mm-hmm.
But since they're all gung-ho English teachers, they forgot about the mathematics.
Okay, summer school we were talking about before I exploded in the coffin.
Yeah. Summer school. Summer school was started, when was it, 1940 something or other. 46, I think it was. And at the Salisbury Summer School draws from when I stopped being the administrator for the admissions. I had 46 states represented and 13 foreign countries in my life.
It's terribly well known because it's so good.
Yeah. And this has been one of the troubles, frankly. Because some of the people at Salisbury School, some of the teachers had became quite jealous of the fact that the summer school was getting better known than the
winter school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
that certainly is true, or maybe it's not true now. But
that has led to quite a few difficulties. So that was the summer school, and it still goes on.
Was it a unique method of teaching?
No, it was not a unique method of teaching. It was, first of all, I think the original teachers there were very dedicated persons. I must say that, from South Kent and Kent, everywhere. They're very dedicated, and it was a time that you could be fairly at ease with the people, with the students. So, but it still goes on, and everybody seems to be happily satisfied. When they have the graduations, everybody is always so pleased with that.
Has it been copied?
Oh, yes.
So it was one of the first?
I would say it was the first.
I thought so.
And I don't think there are any quite like it. I always felt this, that as far as Salisbury School is concerned, when I was interviewing prospective students, all I needed to do was take them out on the mound of Salisbury School, be out there in Salisbury School and have a beautiful vista, and I saw the school. I remember one day, of course, we lived across the road in what's now known as Kerr House. And I was interviewing somebody there, and it just so happened that there were two deer browsing in the flower bed that we had just outside of our window. And these people said, what happens here? So I said, oh, they knew I was going to interview somebody. I mean, I just asked them to come by.
It is a beautiful location.
It's a beautiful location. And I'm sure you've never been in Kerr House, but if you're in Kerr House, that beautiful picture window, and you look all the way down to over Massachusetts.
Is that a faculty house, or is it just dormitory now?
Well, it always was a dormitory. And then we got Peter Sipple, I think it was, who got worried about the fact that they had to go
across the road.
Had to go across the road. Of course, the kids loved being across the road, away from campus. So he was not particularly upset when the town fire inspectors looked at it and said, it's a big fire trap. You can't put boys in here unless you make some changes. We made changes, and Peter Sipple decided that, well, it was too risky to put boys there. We put some of our faculty there. So two faculty members have lived there ever since.
In two apartments there.
Which is too bad, because the kids loved it, and I still have kids coming by, and they're reminisced about what was then called Lake College, and it's now called Kerr House. And they had a wonderful time. It became a family. It really became a family, and of course Jane was always so good with the kids anyhow. So we had occasionally had a dorm party and things of that sort. And could get boys down and have them watch some television and so on. But then we started putting a television in the dormitory, which wasn't the same at all, because it's lost the family feel. And I think that was the strongest thing about Salisbury School anyhow. The main school too was sort of a definite family feeling, which very few schools have these days.
I don't know. Tell me about the dormitories there. I've never seen them. Are they like Hotchkiss, where there's an apartment at one end of a corridor, faculty apartment?
Well, of course, Kerr House just had the
one.
Mostly there's just one faculty member on the floor. We have, of course, Quayle Dormitory, and then there's Langdon Dormitory, and Carr Dormitory, and Kerr Dormitory, Tapper Dormitory, and so on. They're all sort of named after that cluster of teachers who were there in the mid-40s.
Now they have a brand new hockey rink.
Yes.
It's currently Olympic size.
The hockey rink was originally the Red Hockey Rink. Was originally built, and then people thought it was too small. So actually, over the ring, they put a new building. They kept the old ring. The ring in there is the same as the old red ring, but it has been enlarged. They have put the dressing room in there, and never had any dressings at all. They used to dress the old room in the oil or two. But it's a nice thing. It's very nice.
But the word around town was that it was so spectacular that some pro team was going to come use it to practice on it.
It is enormous. Olympic size is the name given to it. But it's a very nice rink, which we paid for.
Oh. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything I should have asked you about the school that I haven't?
Well, I don't know what people are interested in.
They're interested in what we've been talking about, the founding of the school.
Yeah, the founding of the school. As a matter of fact, you could stop in school and ask for a copy of it. I'd be very glad to give you a copy of it. I loan you this, but I think...
No, I'll check with our librarian, Jenny Moskowitz, and see if they have a copy of it.
This is before my time.
Oh my word.
Certainly look old fashioned, don't they?
Wonderful. Wonderful. We'll come back to that. Well, I think that's great. I will check with her. Maybe they do not have a copy.
Well, otherwise I'm sure that enough copies are printed at school,
mm-hmm.
so that I'm sure if you stop at the office, they give you a copy very
okay.
gladly. I had a pair of, you don't remember John Childs, do you?
No.
No. John Childs was one of the teachers there for a while, and he committed suicide, and his widow left to go back to Pittsburgh, and they had three children. Two of them came over here this last weekend and were with us. We had them for dinner on Saturday night. And he said that when he visited school last year, he couldn't prevent them from having them given two of these copies, so they haven't had quite a few left over there.
Okay, thanks so much, Willem.